The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
Tusk. Did you ever see Tusk?
I did. I liked it.
It was weird.
It was very weird. I remember when he was in Volts, I talked to him about Tusk, and he was like, yeah, I really want to do a Tusk 2. We just don't have a story for it yet.
You didn't have a story for Tusk 1, to be completely honest, Kev. So,
yeah, hasn't stopped you before.
Yeah, serial killer? You know, I don't know. When I'll go ahead and drop that name again. When Kevin Smith dropped into Volts that day, I, of course, went to my knee jerk, which is to tell him that Jersey Girl moved me to tears because I'm working on it, but I am made of toxic masculinity, you know, and so we don't cry. And that movie was the first time since E.T. the Extraterrestrial that a movie made me just openly squirt tears. It's that.
That's very fair.
Yeah, it's the scene in the hall when I think it was Alfie Woodard, but the doctor tells him that his wife's dead, and it's silent. It's just a long shot down a hallway, and there's silhouettes at the end, and Ben Affleck just collapsed. It was beautiful. Oh, what a wonderfully done scene, you know. And George Carlin was in that movie, and Liv Tyler. I mean, it was a great flick.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it just, Affleck's relationship with Jennifer Lopez just fucked it all up for some reason because people were really pissed at their relationship. And I, to this day, do not know why.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that all predates you.
Yeah, the last thing that made me cry wasn't a movie, it was a book. Because I read Project Hail Mary in like 2 days.
Oh, wasn't it good?
It was so good.
You know what? I that one moved me as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that like goodbye scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, made me a little weepy.
Yeah, I read that book. I mean, I say on accident, but we watched The Martian one night, and I was like, oh, yeah, I wonder about his other books. And I had read Artemis, so I reread it and was like, that's a pretty solid piece of sci-fi. And then I saw
Artemis yet.
It's good. It's about the moon.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And then I saw Project Hail Mary, as a book, and was like, oh, well, that looks interesting. And so I bought it and read it, and like same as you, in about 2 days. I just started to read it. And the beginning was a little slow, and I almost put it down, but I went, fuck it, one more chapter, and then the next thing you know, it's 4 hours later.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was my thing. Is I got it on my I read it on my iPad because they have the dyslexia font that makes it easier for me to read.
Oh, nice.
I don't have a diagnosed dyslexia. I can't read well, so.
Just because you haven't been diagnosed doesn't mean you're not, you know, sick.
Yeah. But no, yeah, no, I started reading it, and the jumps back and forth really intrigued me.
Yep.
The ending was fantastic. I felt like it wrapped it up really well. But yeah, fantastic book.
I just, it's... him being a dick about Star Trek just really threw me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay, I don't like J.K. Rowling because she's an awful anti-trans turf. I just don't like her.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair. Andy Weir was mean about Star Trek. I don't cancel a really talented writer because he was mean about my favorite thing.
Oh, yeah.
Dick.
Well, honestly, good on you.
Yeah, no, I'm growing as a person. I'm growing as a person. That's nice. Okay, let's do this. My turn to go first. You go with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good with that.
March 7th, 1986. In the week of March 7th, 1986, on the 9th, Navy divers located the largely intact, heavily damaged crew compartment of the Space Shuttle Challenger, confirming the remains of all seven astronauts were inside. Yep. Mass protests.
Rough way to go.
Yeah. A massive demonstration for women's reproductive rights called the March for Women's Life took place in Washington, D.C., drawing over 80,000 participants. This one's my favorite. The Hormel Strike. Violence erupted in Austin, Minnesota, outside the Hormel plant on March 9th, leading to the arrest of 115 demonstrators, with the UFCW ordering the strike against the plant. The reason I like it is because I've been to Austin, Minnesota, and that is the home of Spam. They do. They have a festival, Spam Days.
Strike at the Spam plant.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I like the people of Austin, Minnesota. They're good, strong people. They're of the earth and the ham or whatever Spam's made out of. Haley's
meat,
Comet?
Meat byproduct?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'd love it. Do you remember that time somebody brought us a whole Tupperware full of Spam sushi?
Oh, Spam Musubi.
Yeah. That's fucking great.
I wish I could remember who did that because it was so it was so good. It was good. Phil.
Phil?
Yeah, a friend of the store. He does a lot of like stickers and stuff. He designed our Vault's Pride stickers.
That was Phil?
Yeah, he brought us the Spam Musubi and the sticky rolls.
Mm. All good.
Oh yeah.
All good. Where'd we get to? Oh. Halley's Comet reached the closest point to Earth during its 1986 visit. Reagan administration faced scrutiny over NASA safety procedures following the Challenger disaster. Immigration issues were rising as increased illegal crossings from Mexico began straining border communities. Whitney Houston's How Will I Know hit number one on the U.S. Billboard charts during this week. And finally, reports indicated potential Nazi war crime ties regarding Kurt Waldheim, former UN Secretary General and candidate for President of Austria. Oopsie daisy, I was a Nazi.
Ruh-roh raggy.
Nope. So, on March 7th, 1986, released a movie that changed my life. Highlander, On the Surface. It's a cult action movie about immortal warriors fighting across the centuries until only one remains. But underneath the swords and the lightning, it's really about something much more human. What does it mean to live when life never ends? I wasn't high when I wrote this, but it sure as shit sounds like it. At the center of the story is Connor McCloud, a man who cannot die. But that gift quickly becomes a burden because immortality doesn't just mean endless time. It means endless loss. Fuck, I was in a mood.
going through something when you wrote this.
Yep, I really was. Let's see. I'll skip to the end. At its core, Highlander isn't really about living forever. It's about the cost of it. It's about memory, grief, identity, and time. And maybe, most importantly, it suggests something simple but powerful. It's not the length of a life that gives it meaning. It's the connections you make while you're here. Because in the end, even an immortal man is defined not by how long he lives, but by what and who he refuses to lose. Here's the deal. I finished Highlander. I rewatched it last night. I finished it at about 1:30 in the morning. And I'm like,
That's about what I finished. I think I finished my showing at like 2:30.
There you go. There you go. And I'm like, I'm just going to jot down a few notes and I take it back. I was high as a kite. So,
wow.
Jesus, Bell. That got dark. I love this movie. The opening crane shot at the wrestling match. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
How the fuck did they shoot that? They didn't have drones. You know, I mean, it's a lot of pull focus on a very, very large swing arm.
I imagine it had to be something like a custom built swing arm with probably like a chair welded to it.
Probably. Because that was a hell of a shot.
Oh, yeah.
But no, we when this movie came out, there was a group of us and we all shared just, you know, at least some Scottish ancestry. And then this movie came out and Scotland became a lifelong boner. I mean, it did. JC will probably say that Highlander had very little to do with his love of being Scottish, but I have a feeling that it was probably a pretty good motivator.
The entire time I was watching that movie, I was like, I get why Jeff loves Scotland and loves being Scottish. I understand.
Because you can do it with a French accent.
Oh yeah. that kept throwing me off because like I said, I was watching it late. I had just gotten home from D&D. So I was already pretty inebriated. Threw it on and at first I was hearing it as like Russian. And then it's weird. It kept switching in my mind until I like it went a little maybe like 15 minutes into the movie when my brain finally like locked in on what it wanted to hear.
Yeah, it's you just kind of go, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to pretend it's Scottish.
Yeah.
Because then Sean Connery shows up and he's like, not Spanish, I'm Egyptian. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. Here you are. Normal Sean Connery voice.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Don't lose your head, Highlander.
You must leave her, boy. Our brother, that's what he calls him.
We are one. We are brothers. No, I mean, we watched over and over and over again. And then John got a copy of the director's cut, the European cut.
Ooh, nice.
And you know, we watched that endless times over at his house. Because we all, mm-hmm. JC's place was where in high school, in post-high school, a lot of us just kind of, that's just where we were, was hanging out, bugging the shit out of Johnny's mom.
One of my best friends, Lingle, his basement was where we were, because he just had the entire basement to himself.
I lived in basements throughout, coming up through junior high and high school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We were in... Mom and Dad split up. Dad and I moved down to American Fark because my grandparents were there and could keep an eye on me when Dad would travel for work. And then he met my stepmom, and they got married, and we moved to Spanish Fork for a little while, and I threatened to revolt, so we moved up to Pleasant Grove, and that was better. It was a pretty low bar. Spanish Fork, because this is where I live again. You know, much more cosmopolitan than it used to be. But now, as my buddy, you know, Doug, as Doug says, it's all chicken shacks and car washes. And he is wrong.
When I came down to visit you, it looked pretty developed.
Yeah, it's way more developed than it was when I was here in the 80s.
It could pass for a society down there.
There's some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few.
Yeah, there was a thing they did for Halloween, and we were just heading down to Main Street to try and grab a cheeseburger at this really cool drive-in we can't afford. And there was a line of, like a block long of children in costumes and their parents. And we're like, I wonder what that's all about. And so I took a right, and all down the street, this line just kept going of children and parents. And then it went down about 8 or 9 blocks or so. And then crossing the street was children in costumes. And over on the other side of the street, all the way back up, was children in costumes with their parents. And all of the little businesses on the main street down there did trick or treat.
Oh, that's nice.
And so, yeah. And so, and it was the day before Halloween. Because I think Halloween was on a Sunday, wasn't it?
I believe so. That sounds right.
There was something to do with the weekend, but it was a Saturday, and it was. I mean, the whole town was just full of kids in costumes and everything. We figured out, we had to look it online to see what it was, because I'm not about to pull over and ask the kids why they're all dressed up, because you just don't do that.
Oh, Lord, no.
No, no.
You don't do that normally.
No, I will not.
Yeah.
I will not. In fact, if it's not mine, I tend to not talk to children at all.
I try to avoid it at all costs.
I still wave at babies, though. There's something about a baby that gives you that little smile when you make a funny face at them. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. But that's it. You know, just make funny faces at a baby. Everybody's cool with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my friend Tim's kid, like, I'm cool with him because while I'm playing Marvel Rivals over at his place, he'll sit next to me and ask me about the origins of each heroes and what Aww. Their powers do and stuff like that.
Aww.
And no adult does that, so.
It was a meme I saw online not too long ago. It's like, how come nobody asks you what your favorite dinosaur is anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite dinosaur?
Mine is the Spinosaurus, but I like the, very specifically, the new modern interpretations.
All right.
It's more aquatic. I'm not a big fan of the Jurassic Park 3 design.
Oh, yeah. The mine was the I want to say Dimetrodon, but it might have been Dimetrodon.
Dimetrodon?
Dimetrodon. It's been a minute since I've talked about it. That's my favorite. It's been a minute. And as I recall, it looks a lot like yours, doesn't it?
Yeah, big sail. Yours is shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was my favorite dinosaur when I was in grade school.
Yeah, it is actually not a dinosaur.
Okay.
It was
when I went to school. Pluto is still a fucking planet when I was in school.
Yeah, it is it's a non-mammalian synapsid.
It's a lizard?
It's a stem mammal. So it's closer related to mammals than it is to dinosaurs.
Oh, it's like the precursor to the platypus.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going with. I'm sticking with it.
Sure.
You know, and if the science femme from Twitter, well, actually from Threads, wants to tell me that I'm wrong, we would love to interview her on any of the shows. She's amazing. Yeah. Are you familiar with the science femme?
Vaguely.
She's a very attractive, wicked smart. I believe she's a PhD, and she does short form video across the platforms in lingerie.
Oh, no, then I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah, and I'm like, what's not to love? It's great. Yeah, fucking follow. You bet. I am what I am, and I make no apologies for it. Highlander. I love the relationship with Rachel. In the director's cut, you find out how they met, how he took her out of a war zone in World War II, you know, and basically like raised her and then took care of her. And then she took over his business and everything. And then when he decided he was done, he's like, by the way, I'm leaving everything to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really liked that. I thought that was a piece of character development that we didn't get for, I don't know, cruising for a piece of ass in the early part. Because there's a problematic F slur.
Oh yeah.
That I'm not. I realize it's a product of its time, but I still get the ugh when I hear it.
Yeah, it really caught me off guard. I was not expecting it.
They do. They pop up all over the place in this 80s shit. It drives me nuts. Like, Mars Attacks has an anti-trans joke in it. Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Mars Attacks, and I hadn't seen it really since it came out. And I'm watching it, and I'm enjoying the shit out of it. And I'm la, 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 la. And then they make the trans joke. And I was like, oh, fuck. Okay. All right. I guess I'm not watching this one anymore. I did not care for it. I don't know. So what is your takeaway from what is a core memory for me?
I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I really liked the movie opening with combat. I think it set the tone for it very well. The fight scene in the parking garage was sick.
Yeah.
Really cool. My first thought was, where did the swords come from? And then he pulled it out of his trench coat that he never takes off. And I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell when he's running around that the sword is not in there.
Oh,
but
no.
I still forgive it every time he pulls it out. You know?
No, it was great. Yeah, I thought... Christopher Lambert was great. I really liked Clancy Brown as Kurgan.
Mr. Krabs?
Yes, Mr. Krabs.
Mr. Krabs.
He was also in Detroit Become Human, that game.
Oh, I don't know that game.
It's good. It's really good.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I thought it was really fun. I don't think it resonated with me the same way that it resonated with you. But I think that's just a matter of probably not seeing it at the right time in my life, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I was, 86? So I was, 14? 14, 15?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and I'm 27 now, so...
Yeah.
It missed the boat a little bit for me. But really cool, the Queen soundtrack was... awesome.
That was how I got Tiffany to pay attention to it for a few minutes. She loves Queen. She's Queen hands down. Queen, you know, top of the heap sometimes for her. Bohemian Rhapsody is a movie she just adores. And so I'm like, hey, I gotta watch this for the show. Do you want me to go in the office? And she's like, no, you can do it here. And I was like, okay, you know, if you're sure, because I dominate the TV. Mm-hmm. I do. I got more shit I want to watch. She wants to watch basketball, and it's not basketball season right now. Two more weeks, and it's her fucking TV, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because WNBA's back in preseason. But no, and so I'm like, hey, the entire soundtrack is Queen. And that she perked up a little bit for a few more minutes. Mm-hmm. Not for long, but she did perk back up. So...
But yeah, I thought it was really cool. I thought the toxic masculinity got to be a little much at some points.
Yep.
But I mean...
Leave me alone, woman. Do as you're told.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. See any 1980s movie.
Yep.
You know, throw a rock, you'll probably hit one.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's something about swords that I can't explain, but I collect them. Not very often, you know. I've got a decent, you know, hand and a half. I've got a large Wallace Claymore. You know, I got a couple of side, you know, long swords. I have two rapiers. I don't know why. They are too delicate for me. I can't do anything but make them go swishy swishy swish. but I liked them. They were pretty. They're basket hilted. JC bought me a dirk that's about 2 feet long and comes with a fork, a knife, and a spoon in little pouches along the side. Oh, it's beautiful.
That's fun.
Yeah. I've got several large knives. I just really like bladed weaponry. I have since I was a little kid. I got nowhere to hang it now. It's all in storage. You know, there's nowhere for it anymore, and I don't know what to do with any of it, but I don't feel comfortable giving weaponry away to children in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, anybody listening, I have a friend with a very large X-Men collection in floppies, in single issues, very, very large. And he is looking for a queer kid that would like such a collection because he wants to keep it in the family. So if anybody knows of anybody that fits that, you know, of a kid in the LGBTQ community that would like to read some X-Men comic books, just let me know, will you? I keep forgetting to bring that up on the shows. And now I remember.
That's incredibly sweet of him.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's take a break. And then when we come back, you can dazzle me with yours.
It sounds good.
Because I know, I think I remember what you said you were going to do yours on.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite movies.
Outstanding. Okay. We'll be right back.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
And we don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
I'm reading more of this from last night. When life becomes a competition, humanity becomes secondary. I emboldened that.
You emboldened that?
Yeah, I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the Kurgan represents the idea, take it to its extreme. He's what immortality looks like without empathy, power without restraint, survival without meaning, a Republican without a minority to hate. He doesn't grow, he doesn't reflect, he just consumes, which makes McLeod's journey a contrast. See, what happened is, once upon a time, I studied film in school.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they taught me to watch movies. It's obscene.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like a little bit like a film analysis paper.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what I wrote, which I think is just fucking hilarious. Get high, do homework. Are you shitting me? Bonehead. All right, buddy. It is now your show. Please guide us.
All right. January 20th, 2009, Barack Obama is sworn in as the 44th U.S. president.
Outstanding.
Yeah, huge news.
Yeah.
Let's see. Michael Jackson, King of Pop, dies at age 50 on June 25th.
Little overdue.
U.S. Airways flight 1549, Captain Chelsea Sully Sullenberger landed a plane in the Hudson River. All passengers and crew survived.
Tom Hanks.
Good movie. It's all right.
It's a very good movie.
Let's see. There's a healthcare reform debate. It seems that time is a flat circle.
Again, that trick never works.
And then, on November 13th, 2009, a movie that when I saw the trailer for it, when I was, I would have been 13 at the time.
Okay.
Scared the hell out of me.
The trailer.
The trailer.
Fair, fair.
The movie 2012 released.
John Cusack.
Playing on everybody's fears of the impending 2012 apocalypse because the Mayan calendar ended at 2012, and I guess we just never figured that they might have just run out of rock or something.
That is exactly what I figured. They just needed a bigger rock. They could have given us another 100 years.
But this was, I remember seeing the trailer for this and it scared me because I kind of heard about the 2012 stuff just from like people in my life talking about it. And I think this was like I'm 13. I've just become 13. So I'm just now a teenager. So obviously when you're just becoming a teenager, you begin questioning your own mortality. Or at least I did.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I thought I was fucking bulletproof.
No, I think it was just depression at a very early age.
I was too dumb for depression. I'll give you that.
But no, yeah, it was, I started questioning my own mortality and realizing that, you know, life is not forever. And then suddenly people are talking about a possible apocalypse in 2012. And of course that feeds into my, adolescent, now becoming anxiety-ridden brain, and it scared the hell out of me. And I remember I would think about it probably once a month.
Okay. All right.
Until December, I believe, what was it? It was like December 12th, December 21st,
mm-hmm.
2012, when the world was supposed to end. I remember, I have a very distinct memory of waking up that day, looking at my phone, seeing what day it was and going, huh, guess not, and then going back to sleep. Which I guess I kind of always knew that the fear was unfounded and silly.
Well, I had much the same reaction the morning Kamala Harris conceded the race.
Oh, that's, yeah, so fair.
I woke up, Tiffany's like, Trump won. I'm like, yeah, fucking figures. And I went back to sleep.
But yeah, and then I didn't watch the movie for a long time. I probably watched it for the first time in like 2017.
Okay.
And it sparked a now lasting love of disaster movies. Just something about entire cities getting blown up at once. It like, it occupies the same space in my mind as kaiju movies. And anyone who knows me knows that I live and die for kaiju.
What was the disaster movie with The Rock, Carla Gugino, and Alexander Daddario?
Is that San Andreas?
Is it? Where it's all flooded downtown? They're in boats and shit?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, San Andreas.
Because we had, when I was a wee tot, our disaster movies were The Towering Inferno, where a skyscraper catches on fire somewhere in the middle, but there's a big fancy party going on somewhere on top, and the fire's just moving its way up. Actually quite scary. The Poseidon Adventure, I don't know if you know that one. It's where a tidal wave knocks a boat upside down. And so they filmed it in a boat they rolled upside down. Because why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what we got. You know, those were our disaster movies. Orca, Jaws.
Oh yeah, Jaws. Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
I'd call Jaws a little more of a creature feature than I would a disaster movie.
Well, not if you're the mayor. Well, actually, the mayor was fine. He was still the mayor in Jaws 2, so never mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. Creature feature, definitely. But I interrupted. But yeah, pray continue.
2012 is a very, very fun movie. The further away we get from the year 2012, the funnier this movie gets.
Yes.
There is some insane beat you over the head symbolism, like as subtle as a brick wall.
So is John Cusack.
Yeah, or like the very specific scene I'm thinking of is the when it's showing the disasters around the world, and it's showing the Sistine Chapel, and the crack goes between Adam and God because it's a divide between man and God.
That's, you know what though? That's fair. I'll let that go.
Oh yeah. And then I believe the whole movie was literally just ripped beat for beat by a from a conspiracy theory book called Fingerprints of the Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's directed by Roland Emmerich, and he did the same thing for, Day After Tomorrow. He stole that entire thing, or that entire like premise from, the book by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber.
I'm sorry, my uncle Art.
Art Bell?
Yes,
that's your uncle.
Twice removed.
That I huge Coast to Coast AM fan.
Same. Same. The most creeped out I have ever been in my life was, well, I'm not going to say what I was doing, but I was in the car in the dark in the hills,
mm-hmm.
and I was listening to Coast, and they did the Sasquatch scream, and it creeped me the fuck out. I
the
still
one
don't
that
know
gets
why.
Me every time is, I believe it was when it was after Bell. I think it was when George Norrie took over. But it was the call from that guy who said that he worked in an underground facility and that there were aliens there. And he was like sobbing and crying on the phone.
I remember
and
that.
And then, yeah, halfway through the call, the power to their studio goes out.
Yeah. I do remember that. That was a good night of radio.
Oh, yeah.
Things like Art Bell and Coast to Coast are one of the reasons I hope that radio never dies. Because he just started out as a regular overnight guy, but people that are up all night are weird, and they bent and twisted and turned him into the most conspiracy-laden dude of all time, and I was there for it. And I tried so many times to reach out to Art Bell because we were distantly related,
mm-hmm.
to just be pals. I sent letters. I sent emails. I'm just like, come on, dude, give me a shot. And I was in my 20s when I did that. I'm just like, come on, man, this is what I listen to. I love it.
Please,
I
please,
was convinced,
please.
Convinced for months that I was going to come face to face with a chupacabra.
That's so awesome.
I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't know what was in my head, but it was just like, you know what? It's dark out and I'm alone and I bet I'm going to run into a chupacabra. I'll bet it's going to happen because that shit gets in your head.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it really does. I love like American folklore and like cryptids and stuff like that.
Oh, Manifest Destiny, the comic book. Have you read it?
I have.
So good.
So good.
Lewis and Clark versus all of the weird, creepy crawlies of America. Except for John Wayne
Gacy.
They're
on a secret mission to figure out what's in the American West.
Such a good book. Such a good book. I wish they were still making it. There's a lot more that could have come through. So my memory of 2012 was the thing that stuck out the most to me was the limousine chase.
Oh, yes. Yeah, as the earthquake is happening over the freeway.
Yep. No matter where they went, that earthquake was 1 second behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just fucking hilarious. The whole scene is incredibly tense, you know, and you're just, I mean, it is edgier seat shit. And at the same time, in my head, I'm like, fucking earthquake can't catch that limo driver. That's not going to.
It's the same thing with when they land in Yellowstone to go find is it Woody Harrelson's character?
I think so. But me still being paranoid about the Yellowstone caldera wonders why anybody in the midst of the world ending would go to the middle of a fucking supervolcano.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they needed the map from his character to where the arcs were. Because MacGuffin.
Because it was in the script.
Yep. Yeah, because the plot said so. But yeah, it's the same thing when they're on the airstrip and they're taking off and the earthquake, the supervolcano's collapsing the ground, and that it's just 1 second behind them the whole time.
Yep. Yep. Just fucking wonderful. The movie's $3.99 to rent, and I wish I could rent it. Because remember.
It's just a fun watch.
It really is. It's tense all the way through. And it is a tense that you are forced to sit with because that movie just jams it in your face. The world is ending and it's your fault too.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things is in disaster movies, like public officials like just refusing to tell anyone that the world's going to end. Like, I understand mass panic, but like,
yeah,
come on, man. be a human about this.
What? The movie that just came out with Jennifer Lawrence and DiCaprio.
Don't Look Up.
Don't Look Up. I have not seen it yet, but Tiffany told me all about it. You know, and I know politicians. I've known them for years, and I have no doubt that's exactly the way it would play out.
It's either that or it gets like accidentally leaked in a group chat with a reporter for The Atlantic.
Yep. I'm looking up. What was the date again?
For the movie?
Yeah.
Right here. November 13th, 2009.
All right, here's what I'm looking up. I'm looking up movies that were released in November of 2009. Let's see what we've got. I will allow ads on your site in a minute. I promise. The Box. I don't remember that. Men Who Stare at Goats. Did you ever see that?
No, but I read the book.
Brilliant, brilliant little movie. Ewan McGregor in that one.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. I love that movie.
That one come out too? November? Let's see. Precious. That Evening Sun, Flying Scissors. There's 2012. Pirate Radio. Have you seen Pirate Radio?
Yes. Okay. So Pirate Radio was the movie that you asked me to watch when we were going to start this show like 2 years ago.
No, that's different. This is British DJs. Rock and roll is declared against the law. And so they have a boat. And they do radio off the boat.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, I cannot remember that fucking Christian Slater movie I had you watch. Oh, God damn it. Now I got to look that up. Let's see what else. Women in Trouble. Have you ever seen Women in Trouble? It's Adrienne Padalecki or Palacki and Carla Gugino.
I don't think I have.
Wonderful, wonderful, good, good Twilight. Oh,
yeah, Twilight Saga: The New Moon was number one.
I'm looking at regular Twilight, number one Twilight, November 19th, 2009.
Oh, weird.
The Blind Side, Twilight Saga, New Moon. Oh, I see. That's weird. I don't know. They probably did a re-release of the first one. The Messenger, Planet 51. Yeah, Bad Lieutenant. Oh, no, not the other one. This is the Nicolas Cage one. What else? Ninja Assassin. Old Dogs, that one was bad. Prince and the Frog, The Road, that was Viggo Mortensen, that was good. Robert Duvall, Charlize Theron. I'm sorry,
is that Theron? Based on the Cormac McCarthy book?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was Ninja good. Assassin was fun.
Yeah?
Really, really, just really dumb, fun martial arts movie.
Christian Slater.
I thought... I thought Old Dogs was Old Dog, the Korean movie, for a second, and I got very excited because I also love that movie.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one. Oh, Pump Up the Volume.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's what it was.
If that's ever streaming for free, we're going to come back to that one because I love that movie more than just about anything else. And that was 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, you got more? Or you want to... We'll call that a show
for me. Yeah. 2012. Watch it. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's an incredibly fun time when you've had just kind of a bad day and need a laugh.
Yeah.
Because it gets pretty ridiculous at times.
It's like getting punched in the mouth by Greta Thunberg. That's the subtle factor of it.
Yeah.
And I love it, too. I do. All right. Well, hey, look, here's what's going to happen, folks. Braxton and I are going to take this over to Patreon. You can join us at Patreon, patreon.com/DFenMedia, D-E-F-E-N Media. Every week that we record, we do a little special content over there. A little bit weirder, a little more swearing, more fun. We're going to do that over at patreon.com/DFenMedia. In the meantime, Braxton, thank you so much for doing this week. I so appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate you. It's always a great time.
I'm having fun, too. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you on Patreon.
We'll see you.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/DFenMedia.